Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. I'm Josh, and today I'm here with Luke, and Melissa is joining us. Adam is gone today, I think driving currently. So, Melissa, welcome.
So, he probably has on an episode of Corinth in Your Car.
I guarantee you.
Or,
or not, because he doesn't like
probably
listening to himself.
Chiefs, free agent season now.
Yeah, lots of moves.
So funny, the legal tampering season, like that's a weird term, but that's what they say. So
yeah,
I'm not an NFL person. I have no idea what you're talking
about. Welcome, Melissa. Glad you're here. We do this every week. Just a quick check-in. How you doing?
Yeah, doing well. Last week we had a women's event here at the church, You Matter, and it was a great time of just worship and teaching, and there was women there of all generations, so that really was life-giving.
That's cool.
Personally, my Georgia family, the Raffertys, opened their new ice cream shop this past week and also moved houses all in the span of 1 week because they just didn't have enough going on. So it's been fun to kind of help them get settled in their new house and see their new shop get open. And all the response to that has been really awesome. Mm-hmm. They've been killing it over there. So
I know we went the first 3 days that they were open. Luke, how you doing?
I'm well. We also have been to the Better Dutter a few times, three times, in the last week or two since it's been open. And two of those three times were like, Tristan and I are those people that are showing up at like 7:45, like right before they close.
Oh no.
We are those people. We'll get done with dinner and it's like, well, I think we can make it there. And so we've enjoyed it. Always really good with that. I also am enjoying this. I am almost done with the Clone Wars.
Ooh, that's the cartoon one you were talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah. Of the Star Wars story. The timeline kind of takes place in between episodes 2 and 3. And so Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the mm-hmm. Sith.
Yeah.
But the last 4 episodes of the Clone Wars, which is what I'm on, takes place like in the middle of Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
So I'm like, I watched Revenge of the Sith earlier this week so that I could refresh all of that and then get back into the Clone Wars to kind of catch the rest of the story. I've never watched the Clone Wars before, but I love it. I'm a Star Wars nerd. I wasn't always, but man, it's just so good. It's so much fun.
There you go.
I love Star Wars. So I've
awesome.
Been enjoying that.
Well, as we record, today's Thursday, the first day of March Madness. Okay. Does anyone care? Melissa, you're wearing an Iowa sweatshirt. Do you know what they're ranked?
They are. Well, I looked it up today.
Okay.
last time I was here, we talked about college football, which, spoiler alert, I'm much more of a fan of football than I am of basketball. Of course I'll be following Iowa during the tournament. They're ranked 8th, I think, in the Midwest. The women's team is ranked like 2nd.
Okay.
In whatever division they're in. They're killing it. So
they have a chance on the women's side to perhaps win, but South Carolina is the beast, I think, there.
Okay. Yeah, they Iowa won the Big Ten tournament. The women's team did.
Okay, cool.
But with Iowa, it's always when you hit tournament or bowl season, they kind of always choke. So we'll see. But
Luke, Texas, is that who you're rooting for? I guess
yes. I always hook 'em horns. We look good.
Yeah.
I don't think that Texas has had a basketball team with this much hopes for the tournament since Kevin Durant.
Okay.
Was a freshman at Texas, and
nice.
Kevin Durant is old now. So
yeah, but he's on the Suns.
The Suns,
and maybe, they're looking to win the championship in the NBA. So
over there, but so I remember that. I think that was the best that Texas had done in a long time, at least in my lifetime. Was the year that Kevin Durant was there. We made the Final Four,
cool.
And lost in the Final Four. But yeah, I'm hopeful. We won the Big 12 conference over KU, beat them a couple of times, which is just surprising because KU's dominant on the basketball court in the Big 12 and in the tournament history and all that sort of stuff. And I know your beloved.
Yeah.
Your beloved is a
Rock Chalk,
Jayhawk kind of gal.
She's got the defending national championship shirt
in
her drawer. And I'm sure, be wearing it later after she gets off work.
Yeah.
And can change into that t-shirt.
Yeah. So make sure she has a Texas Longhorns hat if she needs it.
No, we have enough kindling, so thank you.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
No, Melissa, recently, exciting times here at Corinth. We got to move in. You got to move in. Kids got to move in to the new facility. So take some time just to celebrate that win a little bit. Say thank you. Tell you know what's going on and how it's being used. We just love that. Super fun.
Yeah, we're really excited that the elementary worship room is what we're calling it is now open. So it's just kind of a large meeting space for the first through fifth graders in particular, as well as a couple new bathrooms and some more storage space, which has been really, really nice. And so the kids have enjoyed it so far. They were a little confused the first week when they walked in. They didn't quite know what was going on, even though I had told them it was coming. And the volunteers have really, really been enjoying it as well. They've adapted really well to the changes. So, yeah, I just want to say thank you to everyone at Corinth, whether you gave financially to the Four Generations Project or just have been praying over that room and have been really excited to just see kids come to know Jesus. And I'm excited to use that space to kind of further that mission. So,
yeah, I know two of my kids, and very soon all three of my kids will be using that big room. So they're excited to.
That's fun. Hey, Josh, have we ever in the history of the Corinth in Your Car podcast used the soundboard buttons?
Effects?
Have we actually ever put a pressure play?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So so one of them I think is appropriate to celebrate.
It's applause. Do you want to try
it? Yeah,
here we go. Do you want to be the
building?
First one to touch it? It's the number one yellow.
Yeah, right here? Okay.
Yeah.
This is how we feel about the new space, the elementary worship space.
Oh, wait, we got to turn that sound up.
Turn
here,
sound
we
up.
Right.
Here we go.
Here we go. Do it.
Button.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
Inaugural button push.
I feel so honored to be the reason.
You were here to see it.
And
you listeners were here to hear it.
What a treasure.
Hey, I've got a fun question for you guys. What does Y-E-S spell?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so what is E? Y-E-S spell.
Eyes.
Eyes.
Oh, man, didn't get you.
Yeah.
I got so many people with that this week.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. Okay, eyes. That was my really cheesy transition to the sermon, because we're talking about eyes.
When somebody else is
running. Oh, man. Yeah, we're talking about eyes and what you see. Jesus performed a miracle. And we'll get to that in a minute. Adam even showed some pictures in the sermon. And to be honest, I'm excited to see what those pictures are, because I haven't seen them yet, but on Sunday I will.
Yeah, we know some of them that he's showing, but we don't know
All of them, so as you listen to this, we will finally know as well.
We'll be surprised.
But it was fun. So I have some questions to get us into that. What's some of the favorite things you've got to witness with your eyes, like a natural wonder of the world? Let's start with there.
Watching my KC Pro AVR putter go 200 yards up or 200 feet up the hill and into the basket in a hole in one, what we call an ace.
Okay.
Pretty natural wonder. Beautiful.
See. That's a man-made wonder, on the disc.
Okay. I see.
A natural wonder like Half Dome or Old Faithful, the Rocky Mountains, a sunset on the beach.
It just felt natural to him. Yeah, that's why he included it.
I was just playing around. Probably the best that I've ever seen in person would have been like up Yellowstone area. Mm-hmm. We took a trip to Yellowstone in the fall of 2020 with my best friends Fox and Dusty. And it was just super fun, really pretty. The Old Faithful was really cool to see. I think better than Old Faithful for me was the Yellowstone Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
It was just beautiful. Waterfalls, deep, beautiful colors in the rocks and high, steep hills. We did a lot of hiking that day because we just were taking it all in. It was great.
That's cool. Melissa, how about you?
Well, prior to me living here, I actually lived in Colorado Springs. A state full of natural wonders. But specifically for me, I think the one I think about the most is at the camp that we would take kids to up in the mountains, Camp Como. Their camp kind of is up on a hill and it overlooks this big valley and this beautiful mountain range. And so, that's probably one of the prettiest things.
Yeah.
I've
and that's how close to Garden of the Gods. And,
Colorado Springs is beautiful. Garden of the Gods, Pikes Peak, all the good stuff over there.
What about a man-made building or like a piece of architecture?
Strong Hall. at Ozark Christian College.
The off-white brick.
Yeah.
50 Shades of Beige.
Oh, man.
Yeah. There you go. Man, I don't know. You sent this question ahead of time. I was trying to think through just like, is there a building that I've ever looked at that I'm like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Mercedes-Benz has kind of like a wow factor.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though I'm not really a Falcons fan. So that made me think about Arrowhead. And I'm like, you know what? Actually, the first time I saw Arrowhead in person, I was a college student because we went up to Kansas City for a Royals game with a group of college people. And I was like, it was like a kid at a candy factory or something like that. Like my jaw dropped and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, well, it's just a football stadium. Like, it's not specifically designed any differently than any other football stadium, but there was some nostalgia.
Oh yeah.
There for sure. Yeah. So maybe I'll say that. Arrowhead Stadium.
Melissa, what about you?
Yeah. My brain went to another football stadium, Kinnick Stadium, go Hawks. In case you didn't know already, I haven't talked about it nearly enough. But it's not necessarily like the nicest stadium, but it's just like how big it is. And you get there, it just is breathtaking. And it's one of the loudest stadiums, you know, in college football, in my opinion. It can get pretty loud there. So, yeah.
Well, now I feel like I got to talk about a football stadium. But
you've got some sort of building.
I was not thinking that. Yeah. No, I got to visit my parents in Prague, Czech Republic, when I was in college.
Uh-huh.
And just that city was not touched by World War II bombing.
Oh, cool.
And so you have some really old buildings. They're just super cool. I also was very fortunate to go through Paris on the way back from a mission trip, and we spent like a day there. So I actually saw Notre Dame before the fire. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I've seen that. That's pretty cool.
Did you see the Hunchback?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't know. He hides really well. You know, yeah. Quasimodo is tricksy. Okay, so our eyes, our eyes are so cool. They're one of the most unique and complex pieces of creation, and just a wonder in and of itself, our eyes. And so Adam talked about just all the miracles of Jesus. He's the healer. We're in this series, week three, I believe. Yeah, week three. And so talking about this miracle of giving sight to a man who was born blind. It's John 9. The quick recap is just Jesus and his disciples, they see a man, it says blind from birth, and his disciples ask a question, hey, who sinned? This guy or his parents? Because the belief of the day was you're that way for a reason. You've done something, they've done something, and Jesus just says this intriguing line. It was not the man or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. And so this story unfolds where Jesus kind of does a weird thing. He hawks a loogie and spits on the ground, slaps it on the guy's face and says, go wash. And then he came back seeing. So the miracle happened, like, we don't really know exactly when, but it says he came back seeing. So we assume it's when he came back at some point. And there's a whole long story. People are asking the man to report who it was, and he's like, yo, I didn't see him yet. I was blind, you know.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, Adam didn't get to this part in the sermon, but I love his testimony. You get down to, I believe, verse 25. He just says, hey, whether this man was a sinner, he's talking about Jesus, or not, like, I don't know. But one thing I do know, I was blind and now I see. And he's a little sarcastic with him and like, hey, do you want to be there? He's disciples too and all this stuff. But it got us started on a great conversation from the sermon, just seeing and this miracle and what it means for us. And so all of that to say, Luke, Melissa, what kind of was your takeaway from yesterday? What jumped out? What was encouraging or helpful?
Mm-hmm. For me, it's kind of a soapbox, but just the idea that, you know, this man didn't just need physical healing, but also kind of this, I don't know, mental or emotional healing from helplessness. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, this is kind of my soapbox, but please don't see people who are disabled or, you know, neurodivergent as helpless. You know, this guy in John 9, he was seen as helpless throughout his whole life. So of course he was going to start to believe that about himself.
That's true.
And that he couldn't do things, but, you know, Jesus saw him for who he was in that moment, but also what he had the potential to become if he chose to obey Jesus and go and wash in this pool and then be healed.
It gave him some dignity by putting some of the impetus of the healing on him. Yeah. Luke?
The thing that always stands out to me from this story, I don't think is necessarily where the conversation was headed yesterday, because I don't think it needed to. But one thing that is always interesting for me is just how evangelistic the guy is, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, dude, I know that you're questioning this whole Jesus guy, but here's the thing. Only thing I know about it is I was blind and now I see.
Yeah.
And I know that with students before who have maybe gotten to a point to where they're ready to share their story, but they're not really sure how.
Exactly.
It's like, this is the story I point to. And it's like, whenever you're having conversations with people about faith and about Jesus, it needs not to be more, complex than I was blind. Now I see. Who were you before you met Jesus and who are you now? Type of situation. So I just love that phrase. I was blind, but now I see. So there's gotta be something about this guy, whether you like him or not. Mm-hmm. There's got to be something about this guy that's transforming.
There's a cool progression, really, when you look at the verbs, or not the verbs, the words the man uses to describe Jesus. At the beginning, he just says, the man they call Jesus. Like, he just kind of says, yeah, the man. Mm-hmm. And then he eventually gets to, later in the story, once again, I don't think Adam got there. It's such a long chapter. I didn't have time to get there. And so that's why he said, even in the sermon, I encourage you to go read the whole thing yourself. And you should.
Right. Yeah.
But he gets to the end and he says, like, he calls him Lord. And so there is a progression as we just kind of understand Jesus deeper. But you're absolutely right. I've always loved that he just tells the story.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk about, apologetics. He doesn't talk about age of the earth. He doesn't talk about science. He just tells, man, I was blind. Now I see. And so that's kind of an encouragement to you all, too, that you don't have to have every answer to every doubt, to every skeptic, even your own. You just tell your story. So, Melissa, your dad's a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Has he ever spat on a patient?
I sure hope not. Okay. I would have to ask.
Does somebody just come into his office and he's like, yeah, hold on.
Sanitary. Yeah. I sure hope not.
So what do you think this guy was thinking? Like, Adam talked about this in the sermon. What do you think was going on here when Jesus spits on the ground? We talked about that a little bit in the sermon, right?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. I can tell you what I was thinking.
What would you be thinking? Yeah.
So whenever I read this or was taught this story as a kid, I was like, this is weird.
Uh-huh.
Like, why?
Weird.
And it's one of those things where it's like you're a kid, you understand, if you grew up in the church and have amazing teachers like I had, was blessed to have, like, I understood Jesus was powerful. And if Jesus really wanted to, he could do it with just a snap of fingers, mm-hmm. right? So I'm looking at Jesus, and I'm like, "Are you just trying to be weird? Like, are you trying mm-hmm. to make people uncomfortable? Like, I don't know. You could just say, all right, now you see. But then instead, it's the spit, the mud, the mud in the face, the wash in the pool of Siloam, like all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. The first time I remember hearing this story as a kid, I was just like, this is weird. And uh-huh. I imagine, the guy. Whenever mud gets put onto his eyes, it's like, it's a little weird, but I guess I'm kind of desperate. So
I thought it was funny. Yeah.
Try whatever I need to try.
I thought it was funny. Adam is just imagining the situation. And the best thing to do when you read the Bible too is just imagine, where am I in the story?
Yeah. Sure.
And he's like, I can't see, but I can hear.
Yeah.
I can hear you spitting.
Well, see, and there's another thing is like, is Jesus talking to him at like a nurse or a doctor would whenever they're doing an examination?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and so now I'm going to, put
what is he just surprise him with a spit?
Yeah, it's was like, there a warning like, Jesus, hey, here comes the mud?
So now I'm going to spit into the mud, and once I do that, I'm going to take it and rub it all over your eyes. So just be ready for that.
Well, yeah. The thought I just had too is like, he had to walk the whole way to the pool with mud on his eyes. Could you imagine?
Yeah.
Like. Right? Isn't that what we're to assume? Is like mm-hmm. he's got mud on his eyes the whole way there.
Yeah.
Well, either way, he's
falling imagine, off. Could you imagine seeing somebody like, oh, there's the guy that we know has been blind his whole mm-hmm. life. He's just got mud all over his face.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
Yeah. And we know the story was on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
So Jesus was possibly stirring the pot a little bit there too to have some conversations with the Pharisees. And, there was also the connection of the pool of Siloam and scent and what that can mean, your scent.
Yep.
There's all these layers of meaning with Jesus, which is just fascinating.
What I know about Jesus now, in addition to what I knew about Jesus as a kid in Sunday school hearing these stories, is I know that Jesus is incredibly intentional.
Uh-huh.
And so he mixes his incredible healing power with his incredible intentionality to meet the needs of what really is going on. And so there's a lot to this.
Yeah. So the disciples start with this question. They see him and they say, who sinned, this man or his parents? And the belief of the day was that it was someone's fault. But Jesus corrected that. You know, and Adam said, you may feel like it's a bit harsh, but maybe we do the same thing. You know, and the two lines of thinking he brought out were just pride and self-righteousness. But it's also not true to the facts on how this line of thinking of this man's a sinner. That's why everything's happening. So all of that to say, how do we maybe do the same thing? Make assumptions about people, and how can we maybe move past that and not make the assumptions that it's, oh, they've done something to be in that horrible spot? Mm-hmm. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I think for me, I liked how he brought up that this question almost too was kind of the disciples' way of distancing themselves from this person of like, well, then we don't have to help because
it's being an excuse.
They deserve, like, for one reason or another, that he deserved what he's been through. And so it's just like, for us, you know, let's get away from that thinking and just see how we can help, how we can serve. Mm-hmm. Because I think for us, a tendency is to go like, well, somebody else will handle it. Like somebody else will tell them about Jesus. Somebody else will help, will drive them to the store that they need to go to. Somebody else will do this. But we should shift our thinking into, I can be the person to do that.
I think sometimes whenever it comes to people who are in need, maybe even particularly people who are in need that we already have some presuppositions about, that we, for worse, assume that the situation that they're in is because of their own slothfulness.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not necessarily like this, you know, idea of sin as the Pharisees might have seen it. In these times, but I think sometimes we look at people who need help and we think, oh, they made their bed and now they're just lying in it. And it's actually better for them to lie in it so that they'll learn their lesson. And it's like, I don't know about that. I think it's better for you to help them.
Yeah.
And so I think we just kind of have to get over the way that we look at people who need help and just kind of whether it is correct or not that they made their bed and they're lying in it. Don't assume it.
Sure.
And realize that the call of Jesus isn't to help people who, who are only a product of something that's happened to them, but also a product of something that they've done to themselves. Like, we're just to help people and love people, love your neighbor regardless. So I think we just got to kind of overcome some of our own selfishness.
Yeah. Or selfishness, and sort of the preconceived, assumptions, like you were both were talking about, just why people are in certain situations.
Sure.
I know, just in my life, there seems to always be many more layers of reasons why people are the way they are.
Yeah.
And often it's been what's been done to them. Mm-hmm. Just the old kind of saying, hurt people. And often, even from the young bullies on a playground to adults, even like older adults, you know, sometimes the hurt that's so deeply buried in us comes out.
Yeah.
And
I think that sometimes it is fear within us to actually stare ourselves in the mirror and to realize that we're no different.
Yeah.
Right. Like, the Pharisees are asking these questions. They're like, he's blind, so either he sinned or his parents must have sinned, and you know they don't have the blessing of being able to read Romans chapter 3, verse 23 yet, like we do. But it's like the truth of the gospel is that we're all broken, we're all sinful, we've all fallen short of the glory of God.
Yeah.
And while some of us might not be wrapped up in circumstances that are worse than others, the result of brokenness and pain in this world makes it that way. And so sometimes, whenever we put ourselves into a situation where we're looking at someone in a bad situation, if we had walked through the same things that they had walked through, we might be in the exact same situation.
Yeah. And that's scary for me to think about too, because I think back about, like, I had a good upbringing, a good family, not just family, but even the support system around me, church and school and otherwise, that was good. And I made my own fair share of mistakes. And then so you look at people that maybe didn't have all the helps that I had. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Right. What happens to Luke if my mom doesn't, you know, teach me a Sunday school lesson every day because I was homeschooled? What happens to Luke if if Barbara Lovall wasn't hugging me at church every Sunday morning when I was a teenager? You know, what if my circumstances are a little bit different? I may very well be in a spot needing help from somebody, and in a spot where, see, thought process trying to get there.
Where the roles are reversed.
Correct. Where the roles are reversed. And it's like, if I understand where the roles are reversed, then maybe I'll kind of stop caring about whether they made their bed or not and just go help them because they need help.
And I love Jesus's kind of the focus here. We tend as human beings to look at the human problems and the human solutions. Like, mm-hmm. who sinned? This guy or his parents? Who was it? And Jesus almost just tells his disciples, like, hey, put on a different set of lenses. Like, put on the God lenses.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking about the past. Like, what happened? Whose fault was it? Let's point the blame. And he says, actually, there's a little bit something else bigger going on here. Let's look at the future. Let's put our God lenses on. Look what God can do and will do with this situation. I think we'd do well to do the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that leads us to just to say this. Adam said, God performs some of his greatest miracles when all hope is lost. I wrote this question. I don't know if you had time to think about it and respond to it, but when have you maybe seen something like that in your life, Melissa, Luke?
Yeah, for me, the situation that came to mind was when I was living out in Colorado. I was in a pretty dark place mentally. I was just a mess, crying every day. Things were, all hope felt like it was lost.
Feeling.
You know? And so a couple of miracles kind of came through that, you know, in the moment. I had some really great people that I worked with and some friends, Taylor, Logan, Parker, my friend Olivia, who just felt like a miracle to me in that moment. Cause then I really would have felt without them just such despair. But then also I remember a particularly rough day. All of a sudden I got this Facebook message from a guy named Adam Turner, who said he was looking for a children's minister at this place called Corinth Christian Church. Yeah. And would I be interested?
Never heard of it.
and that felt like a miracle to me, like a beacon of light. And so, that's the most recent time, but it often feels, I mean, it's like Joseph, right? You feel like you're in the pit and all hope is lost and then you get pulled back out.
Yeah, and the Joseph, that story is important to me too, and I just have always kind of remembered for a long time now. It was 22 years. 22 years was the number. He was 17, he was thrown in the pit, and he was 39, roundabout, when he finally said to his brothers, you intended harm, but God intended good. 22 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So sometimes it takes a long time to see
years,
it.
Years, yeah.
Yeah.
Luke, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I don't know. I think my story and, you know, all that sort of stuff have been shared on the podcast before. I think that God's hand in miracles were working just in how I ended up being raised in San Antonio, but then going to college in Joplin, but then moving to Georgia and doing ministry and meeting Tristan and all that sort of stuff. But I just think about just the power of the Holy Spirit and the blessing of community to help me overcome sin whenever I felt like I couldn't.
Yeah.
And so there's that part of my story. That's a little bit raw. That's just like, whenever I actually can confess, then the hope begins to come and God can begin to perform a miracle to help me overcome some sin that I was stuck in.
Yeah. So tell me what you think. This is just kind of off the cuff right now. The word miracle, sometimes I think, for me at least, if I'm just being honest, I live in Western culture, America. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think I'm hesitant to apply the word miracle to something that has maybe a natural explanation.
Sure.
Right.
And I think it's just maybe natural to be a little cynical or sarcastic. Ah, that wasn't a miracle. But I don't know. Talk to me a little bit. What do you think just about the supernatural influence that God has in our lives? Because you mentioned a while ago, Melissa, just relationships with friends felt like miraculous intervention.
Yeah.
And I want to encourage people to, I guess, not over-spiritualize everything.
Yeah.
But to put on some spiritual eyes.
I, I think
seeing God's activity.
I think you've got to bring in the context from the conversation we had
last week.
Uh-huh. And it's kind of the same thing. We don't want to overemphasize and say, oh my goodness, I dropped 2 pounds in 2 weeks. It's a miracle from the Lord.
Uh-huh.
It is.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, you don't want to discount God's activity in your life whenever something does happen. Like, even if it's just a small moment of encouragement throughout the day, that very well could be the Lord's presence near to you. And there's something miraculous about that. So
yeah.
I think it is kind of the same conversation as, like, there is a supernatural world around us. It is waging war. And so sometimes it is going to get to us, but sometimes because the winning team that we've aligned ourselves with has already overcome, sometimes we're going to see glimpses of that overcoming, and it's going to be a miracle.
Yeah.
I think too, and just our, I'm just thinking like vocabulary language. I mean, people use the word miracle all the time. Like, oh, so-and-so like behaved today, like when they usually don't. It's a miracle. Or like, I found a front row.
Right?
Yeah, I found a front row parking spot at the grocery store. It's a miracle.
No, it's the Lord.
So
it's
the Lord. I think we need to take back that word in a way
sure.
and just weigh it a little bit more, like you said, and it's, not over-spiritualize it, but still, I mean, take that word back a little bit.
Like I said that, yeah, take that word back and just put on the spiritual lenses, you know, to see to see the spiritual reality that's around us. This just happened yesterday. This kind of just popped into my head too, but I had written a note to somebody, just a little note of encouragement. And they came to me and they're like, thank you so much for that. And that was confirmation for something because the little encouragement was about something specific that they had done, kind of a thank you. Also, I noticed this. And they just said, I'd been praying about that, that God would help me with that specific behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so cool that they shared that with me because it was confirmation, like, that something bigger was going on. It wasn't Josh writing a note. It was the Holy Spirit working through a little pen and a tiny piece of paper and to speak to somebody's life. And so I don't say that to talk about me. I say that to talk about the Holy Spirit. And and I do think that was kind of supernatural activity, you know?
Yeah. So, well, and there's some application in that too of, like, you know, people listening, send that text message. If you're thinking about a person or write that note, you have no idea what people are going through in that moment and how, I mean, I remember countless situations similarly where people have done that with me and it's come at the right time or vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cheesy application line, of course, then is be the miracle.
Be the miracle. Yes.
Go do something for someone and allow the Holy Spirit to activate in your life. And, yeah, it'll be cool. I do think the word miracle is interesting, Melissa, just you talking about taking it back, because I'm even thinking about how often that word gets used in, like, the sports world.
Miracle on ice, man.
Miracle on ice. Yeah. If you're a Spurs fan, you know Sean Elliott's Memorial Day miracle shot, which gets, like, literally celebrated every year in San Antonio.
Okay.
Is, like, almost a citywide holiday is the Memorial Day miracle. And Even just this, like, last championship run for the Georgia Bulldogs, like the romanticized field goal kick right as the ball drops in the semifinals against Ohio State. And it's like the sports world even recognizes sometimes there's something miraculous about it, whether it is or not, you know, big deal, because God probably doesn't care about sports all that much, even though we do.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to picture God, you know, wearing a Tim Duncan jersey, but he doesn't. So, but there is something to that where it's like, that word miracle, man, we've got to take that back and understand that it can happen in our daily lives as we commune with the Holy Spirit and interact with the people God has called us to interact with. And it doesn't have to be extravagant. Like, you know, miracles that we see in the Bible, like, hey, peace be still, all of a sudden calm, get out of the man, go to those pigs. Let me put some mud on your eyes, and now all of a sudden you can see. And there's no doubt that God still has the power to do that, and I believe he still does do that all of the time, and we just don't really read about it in our culture. But there is something to the small day-to-day miracles that we can encounter on a daily basis.
Yeah, so the encouragement is just to put on the spiritual eyes. And like, you know, like last week, I guess getting back to that, just do what's natural, but expect and pray for the supernatural. And kind of look at that. But I guess kind of to get back to this story a little bit with some of the application and obedience. I mean, the man had to obey, right? Like he went, and then it said, interestingly, he came back seeing. And so when did that miracle actually happen for the man? When did he realize he could see?
Jesus wasn't around. We know that. Like it happened that he could see.
Maybe he could see the whole time, but he just had mud all over his face. No, no.
Yeah.
No,
still
I think
a chunk in
I
there.
Think it is still a big chunk of mud. I do think it is probably happening as he is obedient and washing off. And so the combination of our obedience and God's supernatural intervention. But just talking about some of the application, I love this line Adam shared with, it's never too late when God gets involved.
Yeah,
and just an encouragement for us to hold on to. And so I wanted you all to, you work with, you know, most of our, Jenny's not here for the early childhood, but elementary, middle school, high school, you're working with students of all ages, and you're seeing, you know, behaviors, problems, struggles, and parents are seeing those too, grandparents are seeing those too. So I just thought it'd be fun for you to take a little time to encourage some of our moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas. Just with that idea, it's never too late when God gets involved. So maybe a parent out there is feeling burdened right now. They're feeling down. I just want you to encourage them. Maybe what you've seen in teenagers or elementary lately, and just encourage them.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I want to say is I'm not envious of y'all because I'm at a stage in my life where I haven't done what you're doing. And so I do not know the feelings that come with, a disobedient teenager. And I do not know the frustrations that come with, not being able to meet the needs or whatever. Like I don't know, 'cause I've never done it.
Mm-hmm.
I do know a lot about teenagers though. And, I know that what teenagers really need is just a lot of consistency. Mm-hmm. Of parents who demonstrate and communicate their love for them all of the time, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you might be listening to this and it's like, well, yeah, no duh. It's like, yeah, it's easy to know, harder to do.
Mm-hmm.
The verse in Galatians, you guys can help me out. It comes to mind. It's about like, don't
Chapter
give
six,
up.
6 verse 9. Yeah. Don't grow up. Weary in doing good. Yep.
Don't grow weary in doing good. And just stay strong and stick through it. At the end of the day, if your student knows that you love them, then you are winning as a parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If your kid knows that they love them, knows that you love them, then you are winning. Doesn't matter their behavior. Doesn't matter. Well, it's not necessarily doesn't matter, but regardless of their behavior, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the grade that they got back, if your student knows that you love them, you are winning.
Yeah, so absolutely. It's never too late when God gets involved. I mean, maybe you're at a stage of life where you're feeling, oh, my kid's almost out of the house, or my kid's almost in middle school. Have I lost the opportunity? Just hear us with the encouragement and love. Just say, keep it up.
Right. Yep.
It's God's with us, and it seems very, very hard, and it is. Like Luke said, it's real work. It's hard work, and sometimes you don't feel like you're making a difference, but
yeah,
keep it up. Melissa, what do you got?
Well, I mean, my message is similar too, just that, you know, kids are who they are, not from, I mean, sure, they'll remember the mountaintop experiences maybe of like going to Disney and whatever, but even then, like, you remember those things because you have pictures or whatever.
Right.
What they truly remember and who they truly are is an accumulation of everyday moments, you know, and while that also can seem scary of like, oh my gosh, the other thing I want to say too is one bad day of parenting, like one day of being a bad parent doesn't define who you are as a parent, doesn't, you know, define you as, you know, your child. Like, I think there's a lot of pressure of like, you mess up one day, you know, make this one mistake and you think, oh no, I've ruined my child, you know, or like, I'm terrible. They're going to grow up and talk about me someday in a therapy room of all the trauma they experience.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's like, God can redeem anything. Like, it's never too late, you know, when God gets involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the encouragement I would say is like to parents out there. And again, I'm not currently in your situation, but I do know what it feels like to be focused on the things that you've done wrong. And and so like, just focus on the things that you've done right and move forward and, you know, decide how you're going to do better, but also remember that God can redeem anything. God can use whatever you are offering to shape your children.
Yeah, and maybe whether you're parenting or grandparenting, or you're just in your own struggles in life, maybe you're thinking what the disciples were thinking, like, is this my fault? Mm-hmm. Is it my parents' fault? Whose fault is it? And I'm not going to weigh in on that conversation necessarily, but right. just like Jesus did, to point the attention rather to the future. What's God going to do with this?
Yep. Yeah.
How can God heal this? Because God is, did anyone make a bingo card, I wonder, after last week's conversation? The Corinth in your car bingo card. We say rhythm all the time, right?
Yeah, so, there it is.
Yeah.
So the rhythm
free spot.
Of just, you know, whether it's parenting and your daily routines, your mundane, just nighttime routine with the kids, or the reminders you give them on the way out the door. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up, my dad always said, I'm proud of you. And that, to me this day, like, I still remember that. I'm proud of you, son. And that was big. So dads, your words have power. Moms, your words have power. Keep up the good work. It's tough. My kids are only 9 and under, but that's something. Nia is halfway gone, which
is crazy.
Made
it this far, yeah.
Halfway gone to high school graduation, and it's just wild. And I would say this too, lean on the people around you.
Yeah.
The community you have, small groups and classes, and just your church. Luke, you got the sermon pulled up right there, I think,
yeah,
right?
I do. Yep.
Can you get to the section there where it says it's never too late when God gets involved? I just want to encourage some people. Adam gave some examples of maybe what situations people might be in. Can you just read some of those?
Yeah, so Adam shared yesterday, it's never too late when God gets involved. Maybe you've lost count of how many doctors or specialists you've visited or how many treatments you've taken. And maybe your last marriage ended in divorce and you're not for sure that you will ever be able to love or trust someone again. Maybe you've made the same mistake over and over again and it just feels like you've sabotaged your future or whatever integrity you may have had. Maybe you feel like there's a stigma attached to you and you feel ostracized from friends and family. Maybe you feel even so sexually broken that you aren't even sure what healthy sexuality looks like anymore. And, those are the ones that he shared. There are many more. Maybe you feel hopeless. Maybe you feel despaired because of whatever situation you're in life. Here are the words. It's never too late when God gets involved. And here's the truth. God is already involved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like you have to wait for the Lord to show up. The Lord is showing up. You just have to trust and wait that he will, in his perfect timing, begin to show the miracle to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So hold on to hope, I think is what we're just trying to say really strongly today. Hope is not always seeing. And I'm thinking before to a previous sermon, Adam was defining Christian hope. And Christian hope is not just seeing how it could work out. Christian hope is choosing to hope even when you don't even see how this is going to work out.
Right.
So hold on to hope. The other application thing I thought was interesting is just obedience to Jesus can be weird sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jesus literally says to this guy, I'm going to spit on your face with mud, and then you got to go walk and wash it off. So have you ever felt like there was a weird thing Jesus asked you to do to be obedient in your life?
I don't know if it's necessarily weird, but just when it comes to obedience with Jesus, you definitely put out of your comfort zone. I mean, probably 100% of the time, I would say. It's never really easy. So the one that came to mind for me was going to college at Ozark. Like, I went on a tour and I felt connected. I felt like that's where God was asking me to go, but I was so scared. And, you know, originally my sister Steph was supposed to be there my freshman year, finishing up her degree. So I would have that kind of person, but circumstances changed and she wasn't there. And so I was going to a place 6 hours away from my home. I knew no one. All of my, hometown friends went to colleges in Iowa.
Okay.
And I was scared. I was scared to go to a new place and make new friends. But all the things that came from that were so amazing.
That's good. Luke, what are you thinking? Yeah. Maybe it's weird or uncomfortable. When is obedience demanded that?
I don't want to derail the conversation too much, but I think one of the things that's unique and different for the season of life that I found myself in, where I really do feel like sometimes the Lord prompts me to do something. Over the last few years, there have been a few times where someone close to me or some struggle has arised, and the Lord is just like, Luke, would you give up food? And I think that I've been prompted to fast, okay. Just quite a few times, 3 or 4 times over the last few years, for, you know, a season. And it's just like, hey, give up food. And the thing about, like, again, this is me saying I don't want to derail the conversation and then derailing the conversation anyway. The thing about, like, spiritual fasting is that sometimes when it gets taught wrong, and it's like, fasting is whenever you give something up so that the time that you would spend with that thing, you would spend with God. And so a lot of people are like, well, I'm going to fast from social media, or I'm going to fast from TV. And it's like, okay, give those things up for a season. Sure. Cause it's good for you. But fasting is going without the very thing that you need so that every time your stomach cries out and says, I need food, you get to say a breath prayer of, but God, you provide, and I have everything that I need if I have you. And so there's, like, something that's a little bit like, it's challenging, and it's a powerful reminder. And so just people have gone through different things, or there've been different struggles in different seasons over the last few years. It's like, okay, I'm just going to go without food for a day or 2 days. And, every time my stomach says, Luke, you need to eat, I'm going to say, no, I don't, because I have God, and God is enough. And then I have a big meal after that. And it's
so obedience is sometimes illogical.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's something like that. And it's like, it's weird to say, like, that isn't really a weird thing for the Lord to prompt for me, because fasting is good for us. But in our American culture, it's pretty odd. It's a little different. Especially if you know me, I really like food. Which is
so. I love that you guys have expanded that. It's not just weird; it's illogical or uncomfortable. But God's blessings are often on the other side of that obedience, that very obedience. The guy came back seeing. So, has there been a moment in your life where you followed something weird or illogical or uncomfortable, and you have, quote unquote, come back seeing?
Yeah, well,
you mentioned Ozark.
I was going to say, following up on my Ozark conversation, I mean, I definitely would not be sitting here on this podcast today without my Ozark experience. Like, I wouldn't know any of you. I wouldn't have the connections. I wouldn't be in ministry even, maybe. Like, that's, I mean, you can argue whether or not that's true. But I think who I am is because of those people that I have met and interacted with, and the opportunities that I have had because of that experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you do something in obedience to Jesus, you eventually see, whether it's right away or not, you eventually see what he was up to. Like, Jesus doesn't ask you to do certain things just because he wants to, or just because he can. He asks you to do certain things because of the trajectory of your life that can get set, because of the impact in others' lives that can be made. And I think that goes as extravagant as sell all of your possessions and give them to the poor and come follow me. And I think that goes to, you know, just simply love your neighbor as you love yourself. Like, the little things and the big things, extravagant, not extravagant. Anytime you do something the Lord has asked you to do, I think you eventually end up seeing it. I think one thing that's really interesting about this story is who Jesus is revealing that he is, right? So you think about just, like, vision, right? What we need light, like, our eyes need light in order to operate. And Jesus says here, like, I am the light of the world, right? And so there's something about the story where Jesus is even revealing something about himself, and that he helps us see clearly. Other texts in John, Jesus will say, if you have seen me, then you have seen the Father. Right. And I think that sometimes the result of the clarity we get from obedience is recognizing that Jesus is close to us, and Jesus helps us see the Father clearly. And sometimes that's the best gift that we can get as a result of obedience.
Yeah, I know. Earlier we had talked about kind of the one word to change your life. This is probably the last podcast of last year, I think, before it was coming out, you know, this year, and maybe to think about one word for your life. And, I came to the word see, because I want to, like, what you're getting at, Luke, is sometimes we see, but we don't perceive. And so that was kind of my ask to God for this year.
Again, to interrupt, like, that was the problem that Israel had. You read about it in the Old Testament, the prophets. It's like, come on, Israel, you've got ears, but you don't hear, and you've got eyes, but you don't see what's really happening here. And so it's like, we are seeing, but we're not really seeing what's right in front of us.
We need the proper lenses, kind of like you were talking about earlier, the God lenses, the worldview, so to say.
Yeah, so God's blessings really are often on the other side of obedience. And I think sometimes we get that a little wrong, like God only gives us good gifts as a reward, and we have to measure up and be perfect so God can bless us. And that's not really the right heart. Like, I remember growing up, my parents just saying, Josh, I wish I could give you this. Or to my sister, Megan, I wish I could give you this, but I can't. Because part of what we needed to do wasn't done yet. And I think God is the same way sometimes, where he's going, man, I wish I could bless you there. I wish, but I just can't do it yet. And so a challenge just being like, let's be obedient and see what happens on the other side of that obedience.
And not obey because you expect that reward on the other side. That's just, that's
correct.
Just extra.
Yeah.
That's called legalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to steer us away from is just this legalistic type of obedience, but rather.
Yeah, you're trying to steer us away from religion and into relationship.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Adam, you know, wrapped up the sermon. We don't quite know how yet, but it's going to be good. And I know some of the challenge was just, hey, do one step of obedience. Just try one thing. And so let's just riff off that for a little bit. What maybe are some practical ideas as we think, how can we just do the next one right thing? Like, what are some things that pop into your head when you think about just obeying and something, just one thing, super small, but very faithful?
Yeah.
I immediately go to the simplest thing that I can get to. And Jesus said it, love God, love others. So I'm thinking, okay, there's a couple of ideas right there. What is one thing you can do to love God? I don't know, spend some time with him, get back on track with your rhythms if you're off track. What's one thing you can do to love your neighbor? Do something kind for them, you know, be creative. Mm-hmm. But do something kind for someone is pretty good start, you know?
Yeah, almost like just do something, a random act of kindness. And maybe it doesn't have to be extravagant, but just one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, write them a note, pay for their lunch, take out the trash when it's not your chore. You know, something like that.
What? Yeah. No.
No.
Come on. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know if I have much more to add to that. I think just do the next right thing. I mean, Frozen 2. I love that.
Frozen 2.
Oh, so good. But
you know, that was a saying before Frozen 2.
Well, yes, I know. But that's,
still mad
that's
at
the
Frozen
most recent
for taking
touch
it.
Point. The songs are good. I will fight you on that one. But yeah, just take the next step. If you feel like God's asking you to, you know, apply for a job or, you know, like you feel like you apply to a college, that kind of thing. I think that was another one of like when Adam talked about windows of opportunity. Do you feel like you've missed that window of opportunity?
Yeah.
It made me think of a lot of young people probably in our church who are getting ready to graduate high school or, you know, and maybe didn't get into the college that they wanted to, or they didn't get that job that they really wanted, and just can see that God's still involved and God will direct you and steer you for the right path. And so just take that one next thing and do that one right thing.
Yeah. And what I found is if you ask God, he's going to tell you or present the opportunity somehow. Mm-hmm. And what I've also found is it's often a lot harder thinking about it than just going to do it.
Absolutely.
Like when I just sit down and just do that thing, I'm like, oh, that wasn't that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It didn't take even yesterday. I'm trying to finish up some lesson and I got done with it and I was like, oh, I still got like 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's the same thing. Just do it. Blessing might be on the other side of obedience. You might come back seeing just like this man. And man, Jesus is the light of the world. And so pray that you would have those spiritual eyes to see his healing, the miraculous power that's in your life through just supernatural means, maybe God by himself, but also through the people and experiences he's put in your life to work miracle power. Just Holy Spirit presence in your life. So what else, anything to add from the discussion on the sermon? Anything I left out, things that were fun, funny, challenging, encouraging in the sermon? What do you think?
We are not telling you that the application for this is to spit into some dirt, make some mud.
Please
and
do not do that. If there are any kids listening, please do not do that.
This is Jesus's do not try this at home miracle.
I think real quick, I'll just add to that. There are many paths for you to walk. And as long as you're honoring God, like I don't want people listening to feel the pressure of like, well, there's this one right path and one right step I don't get that right away, then I grew up for so many years just worrying about that. It's like, no, I can choose any one of these things because any one of these things honors God. Yeah. Obviously, if there's one thing that, you know, is a path option that you're like, actually, God wouldn't approve of this. Obviously, don't do that.
Yeah.
But don't feel so much pressure that there's one right path that you can, that is for your life. Mm-hmm. As long as you're honoring
God. I mean, you can certainly point at people in history or in the Bible that were definitely ordained and called for a specific task, right? But what you're getting at is just excellent, that so many people, what happens is you get scared that you're not doing the right thing, so then you don't do anything.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's what we're saying. Don't do that. Like, do something. Just do something.
Rejoice always. Pray continually. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. So no matter the circumstances that you're facing and the season of life that you're in, if you are able to accomplish those three things, then you're good, man.
Yeah.
You're all set.
There's actually, now that as we talk about this, there is a book. Let me look it up. I think it's Kevin DeYoung, Just Do Something. I believe that's the name of the book. I'm missing it right now. But anyway, Just Do Something. I think it's Kevin DeYoung. And that's the whole, if you're looking for a resource, it's not actually that big. It's a pretty small, short book. But that's the, I know I've spoken with several people who have said that book has been very helpful for them to kind of get the wheels turning and going. Is it Kevin DeYoung?
Right. Yeah, okay, Just Do Something, Kevin DeYoung.
Kevin Durant.
You can buy it for $7.10 on Amazon.com.
Yeah, it's a $7 investment. It's not that long. It really isn't. And if you are maybe struggling with that next step of obedience or thinking like, what do I need to do? That might be a good one.
Pretty good $7 spent.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about some of the other things that cost $7. Yeah. I got literally
lunch at Chick-fil-A
is more than $7.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So what do you really need? Like a coffee and a half at Starbucks
coffee
or the coffee
tip.
Camper is $7.
Yep.
I need to be filled with the wisdom of Kevin DeYoung more than I need the kick of caffeine. So
that's right.
So yeah, that's good. I like
It's been a good discussion, a cool story. And like Adam said, if you haven't read the entire chapter of John 9, go and read that. It's just a fun story because you read the Bible, and so much of the time people read the Bible and it's just maybe dry or bland, they think. And it's like, no, this is hilarious.
It
some
is.
Of the stuff that's been, like, the sarcasm is coming out. Go read John 9. Have a blast. And we're going to have a little fun. We're going to have a blast to end today. Tomorrow is a holiday, as we record. Tomorrow is a holiday.
Yeah, okay. It's about Patrick Mahomes, right?
Yeah, St. Patrick Mahomes.
St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day.
I got to go.
Is tomorrow, March 17th, you know, and so I thought we'd do some St. Patrick's trivia.
Oh, no.
All right. According to Irish folklore, the gold is found at the end of the rainbow. So yeah, we're going to race to the end of the rainbow today, I guess, and some trivia questions about...
Don't steal me Lucky Charms.
I was going to say.
There you go. All right, so it's a race. Just shout it out when you know it.
Oh, no.
Capital of Ireland.
Dublin.
Dublin is correct, yes. Okay, according to the folklore, what is a leprechaun's occupation?
Miner. No.
Shoemaker.
Yeah, he makes shoes.
Are you kidding?
Seriously?
Shoemaker, yeah.
Wow.
Okay. All right, which best-selling Irish band features Larry Mullen, Adam Clayton, The Edge, and Bono?
Oh, U2.
U2.
I left Bono at the end for a reason, yeah.
Having flashbacks to our Thanksgiving trivia.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Not a good day for me.
So, Melissa, I'll just let you go with this one. What do the three leaves of the shamrock represent according to the tradition? Why do they use the shamrock?
I have no idea.
You don't know?
No.
What's your guess?
Are you guys just studying St. Patrick's Day? Like,
do you have a guess, Luke?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think McDonald's figured it out because of that shamrock shake. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I would say
it's like St. Patrick.
St. Patrick.
Faith, hope, and love actually is one of them. It's also the Trinity. Okay, yeah. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. How?
Okay.
Of course,
that's
any
partialism.
It is. It is. Yeah. So any explanation of the Trinity is going to fall short because we can't explain God perfectly. Okay.
Anytime I have a shamrock shake now, I'm just going to be thinking shake, about.
Yep. Tastes like clover.
Yeah.
There's clover blended up in it. Okay. Yeah.
What's of the Father, Son, and Spirit?
Yeah.
Do you? Do either of you know which U.S. president was the first Irish Catholic to be elected to the office?
Oh.
I feel like this is. Is it? Is it President Biden?
I was going to say.
No.
Is it?
No. Is he, I know he.
JFK.
There, JFK. Okay.
Yeah, John F. Kennedy.
All right.
I thought he was the first Catholic, but maybe I'm just making that up.
Why is St. Patrick's Day celebrated on March 17th? Do you know this?
So that people can drink green adult beverages.
Yeah. Is it his birthday?
It's, no, it's his death day.
It's his death day. St. Patrick, that's the one I was going to go with first.
Died in 461. Okay. According to the lore, the tradition, what animal did St. Patrick drive out of Ireland? There are none of these.
I've never heard about
this. There are none of these in Ireland.
Snakes?
Snakes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That was just a lucky guess. I was like, it'd be really cool
if you could take one animal out of somewhere.
Get them out of there.
All right. Just snakes a few more. Just a few more. This is crazy. What's the highest number of leaves ever recorded on a single clover stem? Just give a guess.
12.
9.
56.
Oh,
on one clover?
One clover.
How big is it?
So I know that like a four-leaf clover is bad luck. How much bad luck is a 56-leaf clover?
Four-leaf is good luck.
He was going to say four-leaf is good luck.
Four-leaf is good luck?
Yeah.
Oh.
Have you just been avoiding four-leaf clovers?
Man, I should be picking them up. Okay.
There you go.
Got it all wrong.
All right, this is a fun question. How many pounds of green vegetable dye are used to turn the entire Chicago River green? How many pounds do you think it takes?
A lot.
Pounds. Like, think about
25,
like, food coloring dye, like how small this and how much it can go. Think of how much it takes for a whole river.
Yeah, I'm just going to say a ton, like 2,000 pounds.
No, way less than that.
Way less
40, okay. 40 pounds of dye.
40 pounds.
40 pounds. A lot of stuff. Dye.
That'd be some green river. That'd be the Mississippi
really
river.
I mean, isn't it already green? Yeah. I was going to say, I know some rivers who are already
green. Last question. St. Patrick was originally associated with what color? Not green. Originally.
Red.
Orange.
Blue.
Blue.
Blue. All right. So there's some St. Patrick's trivia. Maybe you already knew that because as you listen, St. Patrick's Day was a few days ago. And you already know how the first couple of rounds of March Madness went, even though it hasn't started yet for us.
I pray Iowa has won a game.
At least one. All right. It's been fun. Melissa, thanks for being here.
Thanks for letting me come back. Can we not play trivia next time? So bad at it.
You know, sure. I'll make that promise, and you have to remind me.
Okay, I'll probably forget to.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Hey, everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I hope it's been helpful, fun, encouraging, challenging, like always. We want to invite you back to part 4 of Healer on Sunday, and then back in the car or on the walk, wherever you listen to this, wherever you get your podcasts, next week. Until then, we love you, we like you, have a great week.